Adventure awaits at every turn in Cedar City, Utah. Hike through breathtaking Red Rock Canyons, bike along scenic trails, and catch a show at the Utah Shakespeare Festival. There's so much to discover in Cedar City, Utah. Check out visitcedarcity.com to learn more.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, episode 93, The Conquest of Chile, part 1. Today we start a mini-series on the conquest of Chile. The story is closely tied to that of Peru. Chile was, at the time, seen as an extension of Pizarro's colony, although one that was yet uncolonized. It was unclear if it ever would be colonized. There was so much other land surrounding the highlands and coasts of Peru and Ecuador, which was judged to have much more potential, and therefore to be more appealing. You might remember from the series on the conquest of Peru that Almagro had been given the right to conquer it, and that he had travelled down inland through Bolivia before eventually emerging in the valley of Copiapó, not too far to the north of where Santiago is today. The Andes Mountains formed a barrier to expansion. They still do today, and they are the reason for Chile's extremely long and thin shape. You couldn't go directly south along their spine. You had to go either to the east or to the west. Things were okay if you were in the mountains of Peru, which is why the Inca had flourished in Cusco, and now Pizarro was doing the same. They leveled out to the southeast, however, to become the Altiplano of Bolivia, one of the highest places in the world, and this had made Almagro's journey south extremely difficult. He was beset by extreme cold, and almost didn't make it through. On the way back, he took the other route, the one to the west along the coast, but this is perhaps even worse. It involves crossing the Atacama Desert, the driest place on Earth. Almagro's time in Chile had not been a success. After finding a pass westward through the mountains and into central Chile, he had made some attempts to found a colony. The land had been better than anything he'd seen so far, but it wasn't a paradise under the Spanish definition of the term. Farming was possible, but the land wasn't overly productive. There didn't appear to be deposits of precious metals, and the people they encountered lived in small societies. There was no second Inca empire to be found there. In short, it was okay once you got there, not great, and it probably wasn't worth the dangerous effort it took to reach. You also had the context of the politicking between Almagro and Pizarro. Almagro had given up on Chile and limped back to Peru, in part because of this. He wanted to challenge Pizarro, and so he went back to do so. But obviously the lack of potential in what was supposed to be his colony played a part in his decision. It is unclear what kind of a picture he and his men painted of Chile. Did they want to play it up to save themselves some embarrassment? They could argue that they'd come back to stake Almagro's claim to Peru, which they had, but it must have been obvious from their state when they returned that things had not been easy down there. It was commonly known how difficult the route there was. Of course, Almagro lost this struggle. And once he and his royally approved claims to the land south of Cusco were out the way, Chile became de facto part of Peru. Some expansion down there had taken place, but it was all on the eastern side of the Andes, into today's Bolivia. All in all, when a man named Valdivia became determined to conquer Chile, it seemed a strange place for him to take his gamble on. There have been a couple of classes of conquistador who we've met on this podcast. All were noble. But some, like Cortes, were at the bottom end of the scale and saw opportunities for advancement in the new world, which they lacked at home. Others were at the very top, and they used their assets and status to launch new ventures which would enrich them further. Pedro Gutierrez de Valdivia falls into the latter category. He was yet another Extremaduran, and he had an impressive European career to his name. His father was actually a Portuguese knight, but he had ended up a subject of Spain. Valdivia grew up rich and well-educated. He served as a soldier for the king during a major revolt. Then he fought for Spain in Belgium, which was then part of its empire, and again in Italy. He married a woman named Marina Ortiz in 1527, but given his adventures in Europe and his future trajectory, she must have seen very little of him. We don't know his birth date, but he was around 35 when he came to the Americas. He landed in Venezuela, but given his ambitions and social status, this fledgling and relatively unimportant colony was not going to be enough for him. Whether he lobbied for this or not, we do not know. But after a year, he was transferred to Peru. He had arrived in Venezuela around the same time that Almagro was setting off southwards to Chile. When he got to Peru, Almagro was coming back to Cusco. This meant that he was immediately faced with a choice, as Almagro and Pizarro came into open conflict. Valdivia chose Pizarro's side, and he fought in the decisive Battle of Salinas. Then, when Gonzalo and Hernando Pizarro launched an effort to expand Spanish Peru into Bolivia, he joined them, and he showed himself to be capable on campaign. He would have forged personal relationships with the brothers, and by extension Pizarro himself. He was rewarded for all this with a huge encomienda, as well as a silver mine in Bolivia. He had quickly become one of the most prominent and powerful men in the Peruvian colony, and if anyone could get permission to launch a new expedition, it was him. People were always coming to Pizarro, asking for his assent to lead new conquests. This was how you got ahead. He himself had done it, as had Cortes, although both had ended up having difficult relationships with the colonial governors in their launchpad colonies. Pizarro had begun by going to Dávila in Panama, and Cortes had done the same with the viceroy in Hispaniola. It was in Pizarro's interest to consider these requests. Again, this had not worked out, as their sponsors had hoped, but it was with Dávila's permission that he'd gone to Peru. If these conquistadors could be kept under control, the boundaries of the governor's colonies could be expanded. As we shall see in a minute, the king back in Spain might have other ideas for an unconquered territory, but if a governor acted fast enough, he might be able to bring an area under his control. And if that was done, it was much more likely that the king would allow it to continue being part of his viceroyalty. Pizarro had to think carefully, however, about approving expeditions. They had to have a good chance of actually succeeding. For every against-the-odds story like his own, we have covered many which have failed. He also needed to consider the person making the petition. If that person was too capable, the newly conquered area might end up independent. This is what both he and Cortes had managed. He had already faced this issue when Belalcázar moved up to Colombia without permission. That was now its own new viceroyalty. This is probably why his brothers had led the campaign into Bolivia, and why so far he had not approved many of the requests which had come to him. Valdivia was not someone who could be easily refused, however. He had his status and connections, and so far he had been extremely loyal. He was also capable. Surely he would have a good chance of success. What was strange, though, was his choice of request. Further expansion into Bolivia might have made more sense, or perhaps going and finishing off the Neo-Inca state. There were all the rumours of golden cities in the Amazon, and the extent and harshness of the jungle were probably not well known yet, so that might have seen a more promising direction to go in. Valdivia, however, wanted to go to Chile. In 1539, Pizarro gave him permission to have a go, but perhaps to keep any separatist ambitions in check, he gave him the title of lieutenant governor of what he could conquer, rather than the governor title Valdivia was asking for. Now that the bureaucracy had been taken care of, the preparations could begin. Despite his wealth and status, Valdivia didn't really have enough money to enact his plan. Pizarro wasn't willing to provide any, and conquests are extremely expensive ventures. Usually financing was required, and although creditors were more than happy to lend money to a man of Valdivia's standing, and he had his encomienda and mine to use as collateral, when they heard that he proposed to go into the deserts of Chile, they considered it too risky of an investment, and his requests were refused.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I've said this before, but I personally find it interesting how closely all this resembles how things work today. This is the very end of the medieval period. In fact, Spain's empire was one of the factors which helped transition Europe into the early modern age. I guess I had imagined that it had also been one of the things which helped establish the political and economic systems which our world is based on. And it was, but that back then things were still more rooted in feudal customs. This, however, sounds very similar to the way that an entrepreneur today would present a business plan to a bank or an investor. In the end, Valdivia was forced to sell his land and his silver mine so that he could fund the expedition with his own cash. I wish we could know what was in his mind. When everyone was telling him that this was a stupid idea with little chance of success, he just risked more of his own resources. Cortes and Pizarro had fewer options when they took their risks. Valdivia's position was such that he could have just done something else. To start with, he could have simply sat in Peru, being extremely wealthy. If that was not enough for him, he could have played the political game there, or chosen a different direction for his expedition. For whatever reason, though, he had made up his mind and was determined to carry his plan out. If it failed, he would no longer have the money, all the land and mine. Even when he had gathered together the resources, the perception that this was a stupid plan continued to cause him problems. He couldn't find anyone willing to actually go with him. Everyone knew that this was not good land. Those Spanish colonists at the bottom of the social ladder were usually willing to take great risks in the hope of a small encomienda in newly conquered territory. They all, however, seemed to have judged that they would be better off staying in Peru, or perhaps waiting for a different expedition to come along. In the end, the bulk of his Spanish force was made up of the survivors of a failed Bolivian adventure. As these men returned to Peru, having come back with no rewards for their efforts, some were desperate enough to sign up. We know for sure that at least 24 Spaniards would leave Peru with him. If he picked up more on the way down, we're still talking single digits. He did have around 1,000 indigenous people with him. They were easy to gather up, as they had less choice than Spaniards. His company also had an African contingent, but it's not known how big it was. Before he left, he was faced with a final problem, one which I hinted at earlier. The king in Spain knew nothing about Valdivia's plans, and he had authorized another man to conquer the same territory. Pedro Sánchez de la Hoz had fought against the Inca, but he'd gone back to Spain presumably to seek permission directly for a campaign of his own. He'd been in Europe for several years, and although the dates are unclear, my guess is that he missed Almagro's return, and so perhaps was not aware of Chile's unpromising reputation. This would explain why he was interested in an area which nobody else wanted to tackle. There is some irony to this from Valdivia's perspective. With all the problems he had getting people together, he must have thought that the one challenge he wouldn't face was competition. Yet here it was. It seemed that De La Hoz came only with permission, perhaps funding as well, because he doesn't seem to have brought any soldiers with him from Spain. Pizarro knew him from his time in Peru, and he also couldn't really go against the orders of the king. Quickly expanding his colony and then telling the king after the fact was one thing. Directly disobeying him was another. This was especially true as the king was already unhappy with his killing of Almagro. He decided that the best thing to do was to sit Valdivia and De La Hoz down and get them to agree to jointly conquer Chile. They left Cuzco in January 1540, and they opted to take the western Atacama route rather than the one over the Altiplano. Valdivia himself wrote that his expedition was not adequate. They didn't have enough men or supplies. They reached a place in what is today northern Chile, named Tarapacá, and waited for those soldiers from Bolivia to arrive. Around 70 eventually turned up. They also waited for another man they had sent back to Peru in a last effort to try and gather more men. He came back without any recruits. They would have to carry on with what they had, so they began preparing to cross the Atacama. As if this wasn't enough of a challenge, the agreement between him and De La Hoz was about to immediately fall apart. There was always a good chance this would happen. Just look how Pizarro and Almagro's ambitions had made them enemies. De La Hoz, however, seems to have decided right at the beginning that he would get rid of Valdivia, and he had no patience or subtlety when it came to making his move. To tell this story, we first have to introduce Inez Suarez. Inez was officially there as a domestic servant to Valdivia, but it was well known that they were in a relationship. She was from Extremadura like him, but there's no evidence that they knew each other back in Spain. More likely, they met in Cusco, away from Valdivia's wife. She had also married in Spain, and she is said to have come to Peru looking for her husband, who had stopped writing to her. He had died during the conquest, so she claimed the encomienda which he would have been given had he survived, and decided to make a new life near Cusco. Her story up to this point is one of resourcefulness, but on the expedition she will show herself to be extremely capable and one of its most important members. Valdivia had gone ahead on a scouting mission to work out the best way of getting through the desert. De La Hoz had recently caught up, having set off from Lima. He'd been arrested there because he owed money, but his creditors decided to let him go in the hope that he might be able to find a way to pay them back, something he couldn't do if imprisoned. His plan was not complex. He, along with two companions, would simply stab Valdivia and take complete control of the expedition. When they arrived, they went straight to Valdivia's tent, although they got the wrong one and had to be told which one was correct. Valdivia, of course, was not there, and instead they found Inez sleeping. She knew immediately that De La Hoz was up to no good, so what followed was an awkward interaction in which he pretended he wasn't, and she pretended that she believed him, and arranged for dinner to be made, while subtly getting word to Valdivia. The next day De La Hoz started trying to turn the soldiers against Valdivia, but he failed to do so. Valdivia returned with the men he had taken with him, and De La Hoz realized that he had miscalculated. He made an excuse to try and leave, but warned by Inez, Valdivia was able to quickly gather witnesses and have De La Hoz arrested. He still had to be careful, however. He decided that there was a risk that he could be accused of being the aggressor, of being motivated by the same desire to control Chile which drove De La Hoz. It was certainly possible for a twisted version of the story to reach Peru. He decided to do things by the book. Having failed to obtain supplies, De La Hoz had technically broken the terms of their power-sharing contract, so Valdivia announced that it was invalid and that he would be the sole leader of the expedition. De La Hoz was released, but he was to be just an ordinary soldier. There were, of course, risks to this approach. He couldn't guarantee that De La Hoz wouldn't try and scheme against him again. He would have to keep a close eye on him. But that aside, things had actually worked out quite well. The power struggle, which would probably have erupted at some point, seems to have been dealt with quickly and early, thanks to De La Hoz's ineptness. As we saw with Almagro and Pizarro, it could have resulted in full-scale battles further down the line. So this was a bloodless and relatively minor resolution to the problem. Now Valdivia was ready to continue, and the conquest of Chile could properly begin. If you've enjoyed this episode, and you feel like doing something to help out, one thing which really helps the podcast grow is leaving a review wherever you get your podcast from. If you're feeling really, really generous, it is possible to leave a small donation. This helps cover the cost of running the podcast. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's already done one of these things. It's much appreciated. And thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica. And that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @HistoryLatinAM. And if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant photo. Thanks for listening.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.